It's here and now. Last week, a British parliamentary committee released the latest Facebook bombshell, internal emails that showed ruthless Facebook executives collecting user data and allowing Airbnb, Lyft, and Netflix access to it while denying it to competitors. Then COO Sheryl Sandberg recently had to admit she knew the company hired Definers Public Affairs. That's the Dirty Tricks political consulting firm. She wanted to take down people like George Soros. And of course, founder Mark Zuckerberg long denied Facebook was used by Russians to interfere in the U.S. election, and that Facebook had a role in the ethnic cleansing in Myanmar, and allowed a political data firm linked to President Trump to have access to personal information about tens of millions of people. But as New York Times media columnist Jim Rutenberg wrote recently, Facebook deals with these crises by promising to do better, waiting until the outrage dies down, and then going on with business as usual. And he writes, "We should have known. It was all predicted in the 2010 movie The Social Network and the book that was based on, The Accidental Billionaires by Ben Mezrich." The movie, from Aaron Sorkin, starred Jesse Eisenberg as Zuckerberg, a student at Harvard hacking into the university's young internet system to create FaceMash, posting pictures of girls to compare their hotness.
"Unfortunately, Harvard doesn't keep a public centralized Facebook, so I'm going to have to get all the images from the individual houses that people are in. Let the hacking begin."
Jim Rutenberg's column is "The Facebook Movie Told Us What We Needed to Know About Mark Zuckerberg," and he joins us from the NPR studios in New York. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you went back to see the movie. You encourage all of us to do so. But when you first saw it in 2010, you thought what?
I mean, my takeaway at the time was, yeah, this young Zuckerberg is a jerk, but hey, he's sticking it to the man and he's upending the system. And if you remember, the kind of the foils of the movie for him are the jockey, rich guy, Winklevi, the Winklevoss twins, whose idea he kind of, you know, seems pretty strong case could be made that he stole or was influenced by them and starts Facebook after his infamous FaceMash incident.
Well, and yet you still were rooting for him. I have to say, I wasn't, primarily because of the way he treated women. You know, that first face mash, the relationship he had with a girlfriend that was in the film, seemed pretty misogynistic at the time.
That is true, and I would always be offended by that kind of behavior. But it kind of wasn't what I took away from the movie when I thought back on it. You know, I think we've all forgotten that that was in his past. And shame on me for not remembering it, because it's in the DNA of the company, whether he wants to admit it or not.
When you watch this movie, there was sort of a rocky aspect to it. This kid who had some trouble communicating with others, kind of nerdy, battling the good-looking Winklevi twins, who, by the way, as you right now, look a whole lot better in your second viewing. What made you want to go back and see the film again?
Well, for that very reason, you know, I was like, God, you know, what that movie? Remember the Winklevi? Maybe they were us. You know, they were the first to be run over. So I don't feel too sorry for the Winklevi. They've made a lot of money. Now they're in Bitcoin and speculating on values there. But they ran into this kid, and he ends up steamrolling them, and a lot of people have been in the same position since.
Let's listen to a scene. Both the twins were played by Armie Hammer in the film. Let's listen.
Okay, well, we have something that we've been working on for a while, and we think it's great. It's called the Harvard Connection. You create your own page, interest, bio, friends, pics, and then people can go online, see your bio, request to be.
Yeah, how is that different from MySpace or Friendster?
Harvard.edu. Harvard.edu is the most prestigious email address in the country. The whole site's kind of based on the idea that girls, not to put anything in delicately,
girls want to go with guys who go to Harvard.
Girls want to go with guys who go to Harvard. Look, Zuckerberg seems to be working with them, funded by another friend of his, but he comes up with his own version. In the lawsuits that ensue, he says, well, I didn't take any of their code. He settles those lawsuits. Facebook becomes bigger than ever. And by the way, dumps that friend who was his funder along the way, too.
Yeah, and one thing I want to say here is this is a movie, of course, but the main facts of the plot are true, and that did happen, and there were big settlements. And I'd also say that this was a long time ago for Zuckerberg. Then again, I'd like to think I haven't done those things to the people who I was working with, and most people would say the same, so it resonates very much today.
Well, you write, the film's portrayal of a budding tech magnate as someone more interested in growing his creation than in who might be hurt by it has stood the test of time. Do you see that changing recently?
I really don't know. The jury is certainly still out. You referenced this in the beginning here, that we're now learning that Facebook, after saying earlier this year, we hear the criticism, we want to fix things, we, after grudgingly acknowledging, now wholeheartedly acknowledge that we weren't up to the job here in keeping disinformation off our platform from foreign state actors. Let's not forget ethnic cleansing campaigns in Myanmar. We understand we want to fix this. Yet at the same time, they were enlisting a opposition research firm to go after critics who really were making the same criticism that Facebook said it heard and understood in a lot of these cases, and among them George Soros, who has funded research into Facebook and the way it helps hate spread for years and years and years and years before a lot of us were talking about it.
Mm. Well, and you also quote Eli Pariser. His 2011 book was The Filter Bubble, and his notion was that Zuckerberg had to hold fast to this idea that social media was a force for good. I mean, it was only in 2017 that he said that it might fragment our shared sense of reality. And doesn't that get us to what's at the crux of this here? That Facebook, after so many sharp elbows to get where he is, there's a chance, it's still an outside chance, but there's a chance that the entire thing collapses because it's kind of a house of cards. And because they can't fix things like people taking over elections or running hate campaigns through this thing. It's like that scene in Fantasia where Mickey Mouse has gotten the sorcerer's apprentice has gotten magic he can't handle, and the buckets and the brooms are multiplying. I mean, is there a chance that a lot of this defensiveness is that they're possibly looking at that?
Their stock is taking somewhat of a hit, but we've seen this happen before, and Facebook and other tech stocks bounce back. But they are definitely worried. And I think what you see in this pattern that we're talking about is this acknowledgement from Zuckerberg that, oh, maybe I'm naive or I screwed up. I'm going to fix it. I screwed up. I'm going to fix it. And what he's trying to say through all of it always is, I mean well here, and sometimes we just – things happen that we're not expected or girding for. And that's wearing thin to me now because of the defensiveness, because of the longevity of the pattern that, again, is sitting right there in the movie, but more importantly, sitting in reality years earlier. It's just the same thing over and over. So how many bonus points does he get, or how much wiggle room does he get for being naive or overlooking things or not thinking about the implications of this tool he's created, to his credit, that is changing the world, not to his credit, the ill effects of this that we're all now living with.
And the other thing you can add to that list, naive, not sure, is being completely sure of himself and arrogance. Here's another scene from the film. One of the attorneys for the Winklevoss twins is taking Zuckerberg to task for not listening to him.
You don't think I deserve your attention?
I think if your clients want to sit on my shoulders and call themselves tall, they have a right to give it a try. But there's no requirement that I enjoy sitting here listening to people lie. You have part of my attention. You have the minimum amount. The rest of my attention is back at the offices of Facebook, where my colleagues and I are doing things that no one in this room, including and especially your clients, are intellectually or creatively capable of doing.
I don't have time for this. I'm a genius.
Well, he kind of said that to Congress earlier this year when neither he nor Sheryl Sandberg wanted to appear themselves in the first round of congressional hearings they sent in their lawyers. They finally showed up. It was grudging. Congress did not bathe itself in glory. The members, clearly, many of them didn't really understand the technology. So maybe some disdain could have been warranted or vindicated in his mind. But we see these flashes, and we kind of saw one now with this latest batch of news out of the British Parliament, where Facebook has answered that new allegation that Facebook was sharing personal data with advertisers with a very defensive, this is unwarranted, there's a lawsuit behind this that they don't recognize, and this is out of context and not true. And maybe that will end up being the case. We'll see what more leg they want to show to prove that. But again, the pattern back to face mash.
Again, that's a New York Times media columnist, Jim Rutenberg. Jim, have you heard from anyone at Facebook after that column?
Yeah, I'm regularly speaking with people there. And to a large degree, we agree to disagree, especially when it comes to their use of opposition research firms to go after their critics.
Leave it at that. Jim, thank you.
All right. Thank you.